This is your tech news briefing for Tuesday, April 7th. I'm Kateri Yoakum for The Wall Street Journal. Facial recognition software has been used everywhere, from unlocking your phone to tracking the spread of the coronavirus. But there's still a lot of debate about how to regulate the technology. And tech companies want to be a part of the conversation. Our reporter Ryan Tracy will join us in just a moment to tell us about some new legislation out of Washington State and how that might influence facial recognition policy across the United States. But first, our senior personal tech columnist Joanna Stern is back with us with her tech tip of the day. Hey, Joanna.
I'm back. And this tip was inspired by yesterday's conversation.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about it.
In my spinoff podcast, which is called What Day Is It? And this tip is all about, well, yes, figuring out what day it is, but trying to bring back some work-life balance by using your calendar to manage your time.
So necessary. So necessary right now, I think.
It is really necessary right now. So you can do a couple of things on your calendar, your digital calendar. I use Google, so some of these are pretty aimed at Google Calendar, but have a tip in here or two for Outlook. First thing is sync your personal and work calendars. I'd always avoided doing this before this whole thing happened because I just liked having both separate. And I just felt like, okay, if I have a personal thing, I'll add it to my work calendar and I'll be fine. But actually, if you have a group family calendar, you really want to have these two things synced. So you know when you've got a home thing going on, you've got a work thing going on, it can be super helpful. You can do this for both, of course, if you've got all the calendars in Google, it's a lot easier to do. But if you've got Outlook and Google and different types of competing programs, that's also possible. Google around for that. You can find lots of tips on that. One of the biggest things I've done is change my working hours in Google Calendar. Do you have that set in yours, Kateri?
Well, theoretically, no, I don't. But I know other people that do. And every time I try to make an appointment with someone outside of their working hours, it tells me that. And it makes me feel like they've got a better work-life balance than I do.
For sure. I probably didn't respect these a lot when I was not working from home, but now I've been super respectful of these. And I think everyone should change theirs to the hours they're actually working. So for instance, I'm actually working earlier in the day now. I used to get to the office later in the day. I've started my day earlier, so I switched those. You can do that in Google Calendar by going to the gear icon, then selecting settings, and then the working hours area. My third tip is there's a small tip buried in here. I wouldn't say this is a full tip, but it is put lunch on your calendar and also assume that lunch is going to take a little bit longer because you now have to make your lunch unless you have a robot at home that's making you a lunch or a very nice spouse or partner or friend who's making you lunch. So yes, put your making of your bologna sandwich in your calendar so people don't schedule that and you actually get a break and you walk away from your desk at home and take a break to have lunch.
Or buy yourself a vending machine.
I miss the vending machine so much. Can I tell you, I haven't had a Pop-Tart in like 5 weeks now. How many weeks have we been home? And Pop-Tarts were my guilty pleasure. So if anyone out there has a Pop-Tart, please email it to me or fax it or however you send things these days. All right. So my last tip has to do with installing an extension. And I actually just started using this and I find it super helpful. It's called Clockwise and it's an extension for your Google Calendar. And it analyzes your meetings and your time to help you find 2 to 3 hours of focused time or uninterrupted time. So you're not constantly going to meeting and meeting and meeting and meeting. And it sort of recommends to you when you should slot in those times and how you could find bigger blocks of time to just be focused on your work.
Those all sound immediately wonderful, and I think I'm going to do them all. We also have a work from home. I'm sure a lot of people have slotted into their calendars when they find time to do things. One of the things they're going to slot in is call Joanna Stern and leave her a voicemail with a tech tip or a question. Where can listeners call? Where can they write?
They should email joanna.stern@wsj.com or they should call 314-635-0388. Put it in your calendar. Send us a tip, a question, anything. A story, a joke. We could use a joke today.
Oh, yeah, for sure, for sure. All right. Thank you so much. Have a great day.
You too.
Up next, our reporter Ryan Tracy will join us to tell us how Microsoft influenced new policies around facial recognition software in Washington State. That's coming up after the break. You might use facial recognition technology to unlock your iPhone, but there's a controversy over the technology, especially when it comes to the government or government agencies using it for things like law enforcement. There's been a big debate over how facial recognition software should be regulated. Some cities have banned it altogether. Last week, Washington Governor Jay Inslee signed a new law that places restrictions on its use by the government, but doesn't outlaw it completely. And it was a law that Microsoft, a maker of facial recognition software, has been lobbying for. Our tech policy reporter Ryan Tracy has been looking into it, and he joins us to tell us all about it. Hey, Ryan, how's it going?
Very well. Thanks for having me.
Excellent. So we've been talking about this push for facial recognition technology laws for a while. Tell me a little bit about this new legislation in Washington. What regulations does it put in place?
So the bottom line is it will allow use of this technology, which is different than we've seen in a couple of places around the country that have banned it altogether. And the bill in question specifically relates to how the government uses it. So it doesn't change anything about how private companies may or may not use it. And it attempts to put some guardrails around the way police and other government agencies could deploy facial recognition. So, for example, if they wanted to use it to track someone's movement specifically as part of a criminal investigation, they would have to get a warrant for that. But if they were using it simply to take a still photo from a video as part of an investigation and run it through a database, they might not need a warrant for that. It kind of depends on the use case. And the other key thing about this bill is that the public would have to be notified before their government starts using it, and there would have to be kind of community meetings, a discussion about that first. And that's really key for a lot of critics of this technology who feel like police around the U.S. have started using it without any public notice.
So that would happen on a municipal level then?
Whatever government agency wants to use it would have to give the notice. So that could be a state agency or a local agency. That agency would have to write a report explaining how they want to use it, explaining all the kind of pros and cons. And then there'd have to be a public discussion about that.
Gotcha. Microsoft is, obviously famously based in Washington. It was a major driver of this legislation and has been pushing for similar types of legislation in other states as well. Tell us a little bit about their influence here.
Sure. So Microsoft, as you know, has a huge cloud computing business, and part of the way that they expect to make money off facial recognition is they will sell this as an add-on. If you're using their service, you might be able to, use facial recognition too, and they can charge you more. And they were, since about the middle of 2018, Microsoft has been advocating for facial recognition regulations, saying that, there are some downsides to using this technology, but we don't want it to be banned altogether. So let's put some rules in place and let's have a discussion of what those are. They've started to be more aggressive in terms of pushing for specific rules and had a hand in drafting this legislation in their home state. In fairness, the people who support this legislation, the lawmakers who are pushing this legislation, say they talk to a lot of other groups too. So it's not as if Microsoft exclusively wrote this bill, but they certainly were involved in it. And they certainly had a lot of influence over it. And, they supported it publicly. So that tells you they're okay with what's been put in place here. And they don't think it's going to derail their ambitions.
And they've been pushing for this in other states as well, right? I mean, I know that lawmakers in California, Maryland, South Dakota, Idaho are all kind of introducing bills as well that are very similar.
Yeah, so Microsoft has been very active in sort of saying to other state lawmakers, hey, look at what's happening in Washington. You might want to consider doing that too if you're concerned about facial recognition. And we've seen similar language, very, very similar language, kind of copy and paste popping up in other states. The reporting on this story also led me to, talk to some people in Idaho or Hawaii or some of these other places where these new policies are being considered. And Microsoft lobbyists have been very active there, sort of sending the bill to state lawmakers or to other groups and trying to get a conversation started around this legislation that they've been supporting at home.
I guess the question is, and we've talked about this before, but why is Microsoft working so hard to regulate their own technology?
So I think they clearly see a business opportunity and they clearly don't want it to be banned altogether because that would foreclose that business opportunity. Analysts estimate that, you know, in total, the facial recognition market could be worth billions of dollars over the next 5 or 10 years. On the other hand, you know, if they were on this conversation, what Microsoft would say and what they told us is that, you know, they're also concerned that there are some uses of facial recognition that aren't consistent with their values that could be really scary. And so they're trying to take a leadership role, in their view, in getting the right rules in place so that the technology can be used in a way that's not super invasive to privacy or that is used against minorities or other people who tend to get targeted by the government when there's an overreach of power, that sort of thing.
Speaking of that, I guess that's the other side of the story here, right? There have been a lot of people pushing back against the use of facial recognition technologies. What's their stance on this new law?
So the American Civil Liberties Union opposed the Washington law. They are strongly in favor of a ban or a moratorium on government use of this technology. And they're concerned that while the supporters of this law say that it's creating a regulatory framework, there are loopholes in the language that will effectively allow the government to use it however it wants. So we'll have to see how that plays out in practice, and we'll continue checking on this. But certainly there was opposition from progressive groups in Washington to this law. Another interesting piece of opposition came from the Washington sheriffs and police chiefs. They opposed the law because they felt like it was going to be too bureaucratic. Every time a local police force wants to implement facial recognition, they're going to have to write this report. They're going to have to hold these meetings. They're going to need to go to before a judge in a lot of cases where they might want to use this. And, you know, the police didn't like that. They said there was some version of facial recognition regulations that they would support, but that this one was too burdensome.
Our reporter, Ryan Tracy, thanks for joining us.
Thanks.
Don't forget, you can share your work from home tech tips, questions, and stories with us. Our senior personal tech columnist, Joanna Stern, will be sharing her favorite tips and solutions every day right here. You can either leave us a voice message at the number in the description, or you can email Joanna at joanna.stern@wsj.com. And that was your tech news briefing. I'm Kateri Yoakum for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.